Balloon fight, you'll need lightning fast reactions to win this battle in the sky. Welcome to Nostalgia, a chronological exploration of every NES game released in North America. I'm Mike.
I'm Sean.
I'm Sam.
I'm Joe.
Joe remote again, but to no one's concerns.
Live via Snapchat.
Okay. Yeah, that's true. I mean, I don't even have it on my phone, and I know that. Like,
via Snapchat live.
Yeah. I couldn't get on the Snapchat thing.
It's all right.
It's all right.
Joe's here on it.
Yeah, Joe's on it. So that's all we need.
Look for me. Joe, you're Joe. In.
Yeah, that's it.
He got in really early.
Search Joe on Snapchat. That's it. Okay. Yeah, Joe plays a lot of retro games on Snapchat. And speaking of retro games, that's what we cover here. Today we're doing Balloon Fight. Balloon Fight released on the NES in August of 1986, but it was an arcade game first in the Verse system line. It was Verse Balloon Fight, released in 1984. Programmed by Satoru Iwata and... it was the game developer was Nintendo, but the game designer was Sakamoto, who we've been talking about a lot in this podcast recently. Wrecking Crew, Donkey Kong Jr. Those are two that we talked about him being responsible for. Obviously, now he's much more well known for Metroid, but those are two other games that he made. But this game, because of its 1984 roots, kind of comes like sandwiched in between Donkey Kong Jr. and Wrecking Crew. So this is the first game where you have like two really big Nintendo names that you'll constantly be hearing again, Iwata and Sakamoto, both working on this game. And Gunpei Yokoi, who we've talked about a lot too, he's kind of like in charge of all of these games. You know, he just like watches over them. So you have like, you know, if Miyamoto's making Super Mario Brothers or Donkey Kong, you know, or Sakamoto's making Balloon Fight, Yokoi's the guy who's like really... you know, making sure that they're doing a good job.
Good old Gunpei.
Yeah, good old Gunpei. Before they gave him the boot after the Virtual Boy, they're like, what is this? But we're not there yet. That's like 1994. Anybody have any thoughts about that so far? I feel like I've been talking a lot.
Well, you know what? None of us really know as much about the actual history of these games. So you're doing us a service.
Yeah, I mean, I'll make this brief. Basically... the funny story here between Sakamoto and Iwata is like Yokoi would come down, play the game in front of both of them, just be, you know, not a single word was said. He'd just get up and then he would say all of his thoughts and leave and just expect for, you know, it's going to take them a couple days to make these changes. But Iwata is like a programming genius. You know, he knows how to program and he knows the NES hardware specifically. He programmed certain changes for that they asked for in the game in just minutes, you know, and that was like unheard. Like Yokoi was able to be in the room, watch Iwata make the changes and put them out on a new version for him to test.
That's ridiculous.
It's crazy. And then the other thing I learned from this is all from a developer interview with Sakamoto during a like Nintendo. It was like during an Iwata Asks, essentially, where like they have interviews. Iwata used to do them with each person who made the games when they were going over these past Nintendo games. Really cool. I hope Nintendo continues that, even though Iwata is no longer with us. I hope somebody interviews these guys. This is the only way we're going to find out. Like, yeah. Nintendo doesn't publish books on like how they do these things.
That'd be cool. So
where are we getting all these really weird, like ambiguous quotes from?
And that's the problem. Yeah, those ambiguous quotes come from like game magazines in like late 90s or early 2000s. So those come from like the early 90s and the 2000s. And what's funny about that is like, I don't know why they're able to like feel so much more comfortable talking to their boss about these games when he's asking them questions.
Yeah.
But all of a sudden they'll go to like US Gamer and they'll be like, we like to make athletic games. Anybody who runs it
makes sense. It's like, it's more of like an internal thing. Like you feel more comfortable, like your boss will censor anything that needs to be censored.
Right.
You
know, right.
As opposed to you being a representative of the company
and the brand. Right.
Yeah.
Sakamoto also talked about with Iwata, like, How did the fish come into play? And the interesting here that I learned is not that the fish and balloon fight, it's not waiting for you at all times when you're at the water. Iwata actually programmed it to swim back and forth. And that's why when you go down at certain points into the water, it doesn't eat you. It's actually, really it is swimming down there. You don't know. You might get lucky. You might not. If you wait down there long enough, though, you're going to get swallowed.
I thought it was just like a probability roll.
That's exactly what I thought, too.
Yeah.
But we should probably start talking about the game, though, because some people might be like,
what fish?
What fish? This is a game about balloons.
So what is the game?
What is the game? I'm glad you asked. The game is Balloon Fight. No, I should not be the one talking about this, Sean. Come on. Let's do, how about before we even talk about the game, let's do some first impressions. Sean, why don't you kick us off?
Hey.
I really enjoyed Balloon Fight. I liked the way that you moved around. It's not just a left is left, right is right thing. It's all about momentum and moving on like a vertical axis instead of like an X. I had a lot of fun with it.
Nice. Sam?
Yeah. Immediately, it felt awkward to me, but not in a way that's like 10-yard fight awkward or anything like that. It was awkward in a way that I can tell this is something that you just have to get used to and then you get good at, which I thought was really cool.
Cool.
And because there aren't, so far, I feel like there haven't been a lot of games that we've played that really like feel like that in the basic physics of it.
Gotcha.
You know, I feel like a lot of games, if they start feeling awkward, it's because they're awkward.
Okay.
This was one that starts off awkward and then you get used to it and it gets really fun.
Sweet. Joe?
Yeah, I agree with Sam there. It was interesting to see like the physics were kind of like your generic ice physics, but like even worse in a good way, though. You know, it felt frantic, but in a challenging and good way.
Cool. So this isn't my first time playing Balloon Fight. I played it before, but it's funny playing it now in 2018. My first impression was actually thinking like it's a lot like Flappy Bird. You know, does anybody know what I'm talking about? That mobile game that you play as the bird and you tap to keep it up. It's funny that like, you know, people must roll their eyes at a comment like that because this game is so much before Flappy Bird. But it just, you know, the controls made me feel like that. And I'm glad that there's so much more to do in this game than there was in Flappy Bird.
I think because of how much more there was to do, I didn't even think to make that comparison.
Yeah. Though I will say, you know, the controls and the difficulty are about the same between the two.
That's true.
So let's talk about the objective of this game real fast. For the one-player mode, basically, you're a guy with two balloons strapped to you. You have to pop the other enemy's balloons before they pop yours. You get two, so if someone pops one balloon, you still have one more. However, the challenge increases because now you don't fly as fast or as well, I guess you could say, because your left and right momentum kind of drags down a little more.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, you're flying in like a weird space with like certain floaty platforms. It's not really clear where this game takes place. Does anybody have any guesses on that? Like some kind of future Earth?
The sky? I don't know.
Specifically at night.
Yeah, at night specifically. Like this game couldn't possibly take place during the day.
Yeah.
Yeah. How does anybody see anything? Like,
well, that's why you bump into each other so much.
That's true.
Yeah.
And then there's just those random spinners all around the place that are just floating. So this is some kind of future.
I like those spinners though.
Yeah, the future where only people get around by balloons.
I want to live in that future.
Yeah, that sounds pleasant.
It's like water world, just with air.
Except for when you fall from the sky. You know what? Never mind.
Sean, you were talking about the controls, though, you know, like the momentum and stuff like that. Do you want to go into a little more detail about that?
Yeah. So basically, your means of locomotion are you don't go up unless you press A or B, and you just sort of flap your arms, and that'll give you a little bit of a boost up, and you can hold the button down and you'll actually start to move up a lot more, or you can just tap it and be a little bit more precise.
Right. And that's for B and A. So like B, you can hold down on, and A, you have to like tap to keep alive.
Yeah. A, you'll just flap one time.
Yeah. And I think that's kind of cool that they included both ways. B is kind of like your turbo button. You know, before that ever existed, you used to have to pay extra for a controller that would do turbo, but they put
usually
that as like,
don't want.
Yeah. You would put that as like a default button in this. That's kind of cool. And also, this is another game where you can, you know, scroll over to the other side of the screen.
That trips
you up way more in this game than in other games that we've played, I think.
But now it does screw you up, but it also can also be very convenient for certain stages. But
when you're not expecting an enemy, you think like, oh, that guy is all the way on the other side of the screen. I don't have to worry about him. Then he comes over and bonks you in the head.
Yeah.
It's another one of those.
I sometimes notice the opposite where I would be going for someone, an enemy on the other side by wrapping around, and I would like grossly misjudge our height differences until I got to his side of the screen and I was like, oh, he's above me.
Yeah. And I think that's it. That's a really tough thing is knowing like whether they're going to pop your balloon or not when you're very close to them, because sometimes it's just the smallest difference of height between the two of you where you wind up getting popped instead of them.
Right.
It's definitely a spatial awareness skill that you have to develop while playing this game.
Joe, what did you think of like the difficulty of the game overall?
I mean, as far as just one player, it was, you know, it ramped up with each level. To be totally honest, I didn't get too far as far, you know, I'm trying to think of what round I got to. I think I got into past like three bonus rounds. I don't remember how many, how frequently the bonus rounds come up. But I mean, it never got like so crazy difficult. I was confused as to when the sea monster eats you, which is interesting that it was actually programmed to swim around. But I mean, I'm sure we'll get into it later, but I thought it got a lot more challenging when you add another player.
Yeah, and I do think something interesting there that you mentioned about the fish, too, is like, I really like that the fish can eat them as well.
Yeah.
It's kind of weird that the lightning bolt, though, and that, there's just in case that's unclear, there's clouds in the sky, too, that if you're on the screen long enough, they'll form like a lightning strike and then a like little ball of lightning, which would not have, that'd be terrifying in real life if a ball of lightning just tracked you down. But it only attacks you. It doesn't attack the enemies. And I thought that was like weird that like other things affect the enemies like the flippers and the fish, but that the electricity doesn't.
It's just another like, one of their hurry up.
Yeah, it's kind of like the flames in Mario Brothers.
As soon as you said it's kind of like, I was like, he's going to mention the flames because it's like, I don't know why, but like that was something we played a lot. Me and you played Mario Brothers, and I think we always felt like we were doing fine until the fireballs show up. Right.
I don't think I even realized that the lightning was based on how long you were on the screen. I just thought it just was random. Maybe I just spent a lot of time on the screen and didn't realize it.
Well, it is random. It's not, I don't think it's set on a timer, but it won't show up in the first like 30 seconds of your balloon fight.
So it's not like, every 10 seconds or anything.
No,
one thing I liked, speaking of just how long we spent on each phase or stage, is if you have the precision and you are ready when the actual game begins, you can kind of snipe everybody before they can even get off the ground.
It's the coolest feeling in the world that like they have to pump their balloons up, but you're ready. And especially in some of the later ones, they do make some pretty cool patterns that after playing it enough times, you can kind of figure out like, oh, it'd be great if I went like across the screen as a wraparound, got up really high and then went down diagonally. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, that's really advanced thinking and that you're not going to figure out your first time.
But it's cool. There's like layers to it.
Exactly.
Like
that. And that they came up with those kind of structures as opposed to just being like, nah, later on, there's just no way to get anybody.
It's very satisfying. Yeah.
So it gives incentive for more advanced players, which is cool.
Yeah. You know? I think that's the one thing I've noticed about this game is that even though it's not necessarily so beginner friendly, it's not impossible to learn. It's kind of like something that I feel like anybody could pick up and play. But to Sam's point, you know, the better you get at this game, it's one of those like expert rewarding games, kind of like some of the other arcade games that we've talked about here on the show. I think like Kung Fu is another big one of that like it's really challenging to get into. But once you kind of figure out the dynamics of the stage or, you know, in Balloon Fight's case, once you figure out like the enemy patterns and how they attack and stuff, I don't think that like, you know, an expert has too much trouble getting through like the beginner rounds.
Yeah, but I also think that there isn't too much trouble. I think maybe your first couple lives you'll lose really quickly. But I think once you just get a hang of a little bit of the controls, I think that you can enjoy the game just as much. Like, I don't think it's like Kung Fu where you're going to die in the first level 15 times before you get to the second floor.
Right.
I think it's more of like a guitar, like where it's got a low barrier of entry, but a really high ceiling. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And I think one place where we see that most is in Balloon Trip.
Yeah.
That that is the game C. We'll go back to the one-player game in a bit when we talk about two-player, but I thought we should talk about Balloon Trip since it's another one-player version of the game. Essentially, this is a side-scrolling game where the screen keeps moving, but you have to collect just the balloons. There's no real enemies or anything except for the lightning bolts, which are sometimes static, sometimes move in patterns, but the balloons are the only thing you have to collect, and there's like a rank thing up at the top right that says like rank 50 and then counts down. Anybody know what that's about?
I have no idea.
The 40 something imaginary players that you're playing with.
Yeah, it's like it's but they're way ahead of rank you. Yeah. They're way ahead of you. Joe, did you play Balloon Trip?
Yeah. I was my one complaint about it. Maybe I'm just being a baby, is that you only get one life. So I felt like and you have to start from scratch after that one life. So I felt like I never got to get that far. So I guess it's a setup to get
one balloon.
No, you get hit once. You start with two balloons, but you get hit once and you're dead. Which is weird because
of lightning bolts.
Yeah.
It's kind of cool though because it goes back into that like expert rewarding thing, and this is sort of like a training program for the rest of the game. Like if you feel like you're not good enough for the rest of the game, but you just want to focus on flying better, which will make you better at the game, then you can just jump into this one.
Right.
Yeah, and to your point too about like the expert thing, it's like in Balloon Trip, it's always the same layout too. So one thing that was funny is I was watching something of Iwata playing the game when he's the president of Nintendo of America years later on like a Game Center CX thing that's like a show in Japan. And, you know, they ask him like, oh, when was the last time you played this game? And he was like, I play this game pretty often. And then he goes into Balloon Trip mode. And he like has like the perfect pattern of like going through this thing and like starts going up, dips down low, comes back up. He knows where the fish is going to be. It's really funny to watch that happen. And that's what I imagine an expert playing like. Now, does anybody know what happens if you collect 20 balloons in Balloon Trip in a row without missing any?
No.
Good.
No.
I'm glad no one knew because it's a very hard thing to pull off. Personally, I'll just be honest, I have not been able to do it myself. It's very hard to get 20 balloons in a row while dodging all those lightning bolts and also, like, you know, not missing any at the same time. So what happens is if you do manage to collect 20, the balloons turn orange and they kind of freeze for a second. So you're able to collect like a bunch of them before the stage continues.
Oh, okay, cool.
I think it's like a neat little thing. It kind of reminds me of how in pinball, after like doing a certain task, the board would change colors.
Mm-hmm.
That's another a thing that Iwata programmed. So it seemed like he just had a flair for like, do these funny things and I'll change the colors of the game.
He likes colors.
Well, you know how simple they are, Sean. We were talking about that earlier in the interviews. Like, they're like,
I like colors.
Yeah, they're like, we wanted to make a game that was about colors.
Colors are good.
They never said that in an interview. I just want to put that out there. Any other thoughts on Balloon Trip?
No.
Oh, yeah, okay.
It was fine. I thought it. Go ahead, Joe.
Sorry, I was just going to say it was pretty much like once you play it for a couple minutes, you kind of have the idea of it.
Yeah.
This was a mode that I tried for a while. Like, I was like, oh, this is there's like a thing here, like a pattern I can figure out. I really want to get those orange balloons just to see what it's like. I wound up having to watch a video. But it doesn't feel as rewarding as getting a higher score in the one-player mode because it's the same thing over and over again. I found myself keep dying at the same points. And it has like that like frustration factor where you're just like, okay, again. But after a while, I was just like, I think I've seen this.
Yeah.
You know, like if there was maybe some different kind of variety, like each stage was randomly generated or later on enemies got added or the fish started like hopping out and trying to swallow you, like I feel like that stuff would be cool, but there wasn't enough going on. It was just more like you know, dodging the lightning bolts was
it's
the
going
only
right
thing
back to Flappy Bird, and this is like this mode is the Flappy Bird mode.
Right.
Yeah, that's pretty accurate actually. It almost just feels like like you would just use this as like you're playing this game with a friend and you have like five more minutes. You're like, let's see who can get farther, because you're probably not going to be in, unless you're really good at it. It's not going to take that long before one of you dies.
Right. And speaking of friends, that was a great segue for the two player mode.
I love friends. Okay.
I'm keeping that in. I don't know. I'll put that under the music. I love friends. What are friends? Did anybody play this with two players?
I think we all did this time, didn't we?
Yeah.
Okay. Joe, you take us through. You know, you're always the guy with the most amount of friends who plays these games.
This time I actually played it, honestly, I played it single player mostly, and then before we recorded, I was like, I should see what this is like with two players. So I played very recently, and it's definitely better as a two player experience, I think, because it's a little more, you know, you can screw each other over. You're trying to get, it's the same thing. You're just trying to get more points than the other person. But you can also pop each other's balloons now. So the floaty controls combined with like the frantic nature of it all makes it kind of an interesting competitive experience.
And even when you're not trying to be competitive, you still run that risk of popping your, you know, your friend's balloon. Like, you're not trying to do it, but, you know, you're both trying to go after this enemy. And then all of a sudden it's like you pop their balloon and it's like, oh, well, I'm sorry, I didn't mean it.
Yeah. God damn it, Mike.
Mike and I played a couple times, and that seemed to be the case for most of it. Because, I mean, a lot of times it's just beneficial for both of you to not screw each other over.
I would say, I would agree with that, and I would say even more so in this game. We talked about this in Mario Brothers, where Sean was not having it. He's like, no, you gotta kill each other in this game. It's all about the points. In this game, the points are king still, but I think you get more points when you keep your second player alive and you help each other than you would ever get on your own. Because
also when
you divide and conquer,
you'll get more points, but you still run the risk of like, and I did this when I was playing with you. I knew that you kept getting more, but like I was trying to be cooperative for once.
Yeah, so you're still running that risk of falling behind.
Yeah,
while someone else gets, and that does happen. I think even though we were both doing pretty good, we were both at 200,000, and you were still like, you know, it was like when I had 220, you had 200. You know, so it's like even though we thought we were close, it was a 20,000 point difference.
That's quite the difference.
And I didn't mean to brag about that. I'm just talking about it because we're talking about the multiplayer section. All right, so we talked about two player, we talked about Balloon Trip. Anybody know about Balloon Kid?
Is that your character?
That, you know, you could maybe say that, but I'm not saying that. Balloon Kid is actually like the Game Boy sequel to this game.
Oh.
And what's interesting about that, I wouldn't even think to bring it up really, because there's been other Game Boy ports of the games that we played on NES so far, like baseball and stuff like that. But Balloon Kid is interesting because it's not a port, it's a sequel, and it's actually like a platform adventure game.
But you still have balloons tied to your body.
You still have balloons tied to your body. There are stages and levels, like totally different, totally new, and you're collecting balloons still, but there's like platforming challenges, and you have to like, you know, complete a mission, you know, there's an actual like structure to the game.
That sounds cool.
And it's very interesting.
Is it an Iwata game?
This is somehow ringing a bell to me. Like I don't know this game, but the way you're describing it, I feel like I've seen it or played it before. I can't think of what.
I think if you saw it, you would probably recognize it, because even though it's not like a big game in their catalog and stuff like that, I think it is thought of fondly by people who are a fan of the Balloon Fight franchise, because personally I think that's like a really cool like next step for that game, is not to just like add more elements to the arcade mode, kind of like what we were talking about with Mario Brothers.
Yeah.
Like another if they made a, you know how they make a new Super Mario Brothers, if they made a new Mario Brothers, what would it be? If they made a modern day Balloon Fight, what would you add?
I think the joke is always just, it's an open world balloon fight.
But I think
it'd be like the beginning of, like Fortnite or something, or Players Unknown Battleground, where you're all jumping from the plane, but you just stay there.
Yeah,
just stay in the sky.
Just stay in the air.
So it's like a battle royale game, but in the sky, and you have to keep pressing the button to stay up.
For like 40 minutes.
Yeah.
What's funny here, though, is that we don't have to answer that question necessarily, because I think they took the next logical step with it, with this platforming game. I think definitely like even a 3D platformer with the balloon fight model would be like a cool thing to do.
Yeah, I think I'm just trying to figure out what I'm thinking of, and I think there are a lot of games that have that as a mini game. Like I feel like there's something with Pikachu and balloons where you do that, or. In Kingdom Hearts.
Flying Pikachu.
Is that a thing?
The game was Flying Pikachu.
Yeah, Flying Pikachu is a thing where it's just Pikachu with two balloons tied to her.
Pokemon Snap, but is it anything else?
No. It's also like a thing that they've
just... It's like a card.
It's a card. It's been done. You know, it's like a card.
That's what I'm thinking of. I knew I was thinking, and I think it's in Pokemon Yellow. Not to make this a Pokemon podcast, but...
Okay, so interesting thing here. Since Joe asked it earlier, I took the time to look it up. It's Sakamoto Joint. Balloon Kid.
Wow.
He did. He was the director on it, and Yokoi was the producer. So they really, you know, I will say this. When Iwata mentioned that he had been playing this game for years and stuff like that, that's probably like the honest truth, because Nintendo does feel fondly about this game too, more so than a lot of their arcade games. And this being, you know, brought to the NES, it also gets its own Game Boy game. It gets so many ports.
It's got
down
character,
the line too.
This game.
Yeah, it's got
that really weird kind of, oh yeah, this is like an awkward seeming, but there's more to it, Nintendo game.
Right, and I think like they're really proud of what they were able to accomplish with the controls and stuff like that too, that they brought it to e-reader. They brought it, you know, there was an e-reader version. It's on Animal Crossing for Nintendo GameCube. It's on every version of Virtual Console. Like, this is just a game that continues to get different versions. And I think even the Famicom Disk System got, like, multiple different versions of this game.
That's all great. And I really do think that this is a charming game. But we haven't even mentioned that this started out as just a clone. What, like, it's a clone of Joust, right?
Right, which is funny because then that's another arcade game.
Yeah. So, I mean, we're lauding it, and I think that it's justified. But I just think it's funny that we haven't even mentioned that game.
No, you're right. And I think like that is like the differential here, is that like Donkey Kong is a huge arcade game. That's its own thing.
Yeah.
There's no game like Donkey Kong before it. This is kind of weird because Joust isn't necessarily the most popular arcade game.
Mm-hmm.
And I think in the grand scheme of not arcade games, but just the grand scheme of video gaming, Balloon Fight might now be more recognizable than Joust.
Yeah.
So it's funny to think of it that way, but I think like in the arcade, I think Joust pops more than Balloon Fight.
Because I've seen Joust cabinets.
Right, that's what I'm saying. But they're also, the Verse system cabinets in general, since we've been talking about them, I'll just go over that really quickly. They're not the prettiest looking cabinets. They didn't really put that Nintendo flair that they would develop into their consoles and boxes for games and stuff like that they wound up doing. The Verse system, it's usually just like a blue cabinet with some decal stuff on the side.
I see.
The ones that got like the special treatment are the ones that aren't under the Verse system name, like Mario Brothers, Donkey Kong, Donkey Kong Jr. Like, those are their own standalone arcade games before they develop the Verse system line. And those are beautiful cabinets. I mean, like, whenever you see a Donkey Kong cabinet, that pops out, not just from sound, but also from the visuals.
Mm-hmm.
All right, guys. So I think we've exhausted what we can talk about Balloon Fight here. I will just say that I enjoy this game, and since we were talking about high scores in some of the other games, I topped out at about 343,000 in this one, and I felt really good about that.
Now, what was your single player?
Oh, thank you for bringing that up, Sean. You couldn't let me have my moment.
Couldn't.
The moment in the sky. You could have argued that had I played that well in single player, I could have seen a 500 or 600,000 point game. But no, in single player, I don't think I made it even above 200,000. I don't really remember. I think it was right around, like, probably 160, 170. 70 was my best.
Okay. Well, so you're still overachieving.
Still, well, you know what? I will say this. This is similar to how, like, I played a lot of golf.
Yeah.
I played a lot of Balloon Fight.
Yeah,
I really like this game. And speaking of talking about whether we like or dislike this game, it's time for the Essential Games List. All right, guys. Took a quick break there to listen to Sam's music. This is the Essential Games List, and if you're unfamiliar, go listen to some other episodes. No, I'm joking. Seriously, listen to some of the other episodes. The Essential Games List is where we kind of determine, like, you know, you got all these games out today, and your backlog's getting bigger and bigger, but hey, there's these games on the NES. Are they any good? Are they essential even? We're going to talk about that, but we're not talking about if they were good then. That's kind of like history has decided if these games were good back then. We're deciding if they're still good today. So with that in mind, Sean, Balloon Fight. Sean needs a moment. Yeah, he had a tough time earlier, so we'll move over to Sam. Sam, yeah. Balloon Fight, what'd you think? Would you still play it today?
Balloon Fight, I think that it is a solid game. I think that it's a fun game. It's a fun game, you know, with friends. It's great. I think that it's a game that has lots of layers that you don't usually see. But it's still not, like, I wouldn't say it's essential. I think that it's a ton of fun. More if you have friends to play with, it's a ton of fun. But no, it's not essential.
Okay. This is just something I've noticed. I love when you know that we like a game. Like, we would recommend it. We wouldn't say it's essential. When we do the whole praise thing and then say, but
yeah, because I can't just be like, oh no, it's not essential. You know, I can't. I feel like I'd be a jerk if I did.
Right.
Because it is fun, and you can tell there's a lot of love put into this game.
Yep, Joe.
I can't imagine someone picking up this game and not liking it. It is kind of like what Sam said. It is really fun. The controls and it being a 2-player game makes it like a good game when you have company over. But overall, I think one thing we didn't really mention was that it is, once you kind of get into it, it is kind of bare bones. It doesn't, I can see it getting old fast. So yeah, I mean, it's definitely a play it in my opinion, but I wouldn't vote for it to be essential.
Okay. Sean, you ready for us?
I'm ready for you.
Let me hear it.
See, I'm trying to think of the other games that we've played so far and how often I'm ever going to play those again. And a lot of them are never.
Yeah.
And I think about Balloon Fight. And I think about what kind of games are like Balloon Fight now. And there aren't that many. Like, there's Joust.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of just the way that you play. And that's also a very old game. I would say that I think this is an essential game.
Okay.
For the NES. Yes.
John, there was one thing that you focused in on there that I was definitely going to say. So I'm going to say it again. There is not another game like this today. Like this is a game that you can still play. And has not been like reiterated 1,000 times. I think it is good old fashioned fun that I think you could pick up and play today. In fact, this is the kind of game that makes me wish there was Virtual Console on Switch, even though we all know how easy it is to get a Raspberry Pi and play these games. I would love to have this game on Switch so that I could easily just break out the Joy-Cons, play with a second player right then and there anywhere in the world. Like, you know, a game like baseball or a game like even we were talking earlier about Kung Fu. Those games don't really make me crave Virtual Console on Switch because I'm like, oh, well, I can play those. You know, this is a game where I would want to have like, oh, hey, I have Balloon Fight on me. Want to get like a quick round in before this movie starts? Like, that's weird, but and like sounds like a Nintendo commercial. But that's kind of like how I use my Switch. Like I use it in like rare moments where I'm like, hey, I just happen to have this out. You want to play it now? I'm not a guy who like plays his Switch too much in his alone time. I like to play it with friends.
Yeah.
You know, so this is a game where I was like, oh, I kind of wish this was on the Switch and this would be a great use of it. That said, obviously, that means that I think that this game is still worth playing today. And I'm going to put it on the essential games list.
It's on the list.
So it is an essential game.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, it's funny is I knew I was going to vote it essential days ago, but it's good that I finally was getting somebody else on board for it too. Joe, how do you feel about it being essential?
I still stand by, you know, my opinion, but it's not one where I'm opposed to it being essential. I mean, this is the closest one for me to being essential that we had in a long time. So
that's really cool.
I'd like to say it's not, but I don't. It doesn't upset me that it is because it's a good game.
That's really cool. And so yeah, I think that you know this is a fun way. And who knows? You know, we will talk about this at the end of 86. This could wind up being an Excite Bike situation where we're just really jazzed about this game right now. But then the end of 86 party comes up, and I'm like, I haven't played this game since, so I don't know if I actually liked it.
The Excite Bike incident.
But I do think that that's all the time we have for this episode of Nostalgia. Join us next time for Gumshoe, and be sure to play it yourself if you have a CRT. For more Nostalgia, please subscribe to our podcast wherever you listen, and be sure to check out NostalgiaCast.com. That's NostalgiaCast.com. There you'll find links to the show and show notes, as well as our other platforms such as Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook. Thank you so much for your support of Nostalgia. We thank you for spending time with us. I'm Michael Esposito. You can find me on @EspositoFilm on Twitter, and I'll talk to you soon.
Fun with Balloon Shot.
Balloon Shot. People really will think this game is about balloons.
I had a lot of fight with Balloon Shot.
You're a clown in a garage, and people are coming up and ordering different colored balloons, and you have to make sure you have enough inventory.
All right, that'll make it onto the
fucking shit.
That's in the post show.
What are you doing? You're a mess. Do you want me to restart like the whole episode?
No,
like,
no. I will start with 10 yard fight.